And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Thursday, December 5th, 2024. Truck drivers from East Africa protest South Sudan's new $70 tax on every truck entering the country.
You can impose any taxes in your market, but not on highway. Highway are public roads. The meaning of public is that they are constructed by public money. They belong to everybody.
And South Sudanese political actors meeting in Uganda say they are working to end the conflict in their country.
We are not a mediator. We made this very clear. We are not supporting any side, but we are not neutral. We are stakeholders. And if you are a stakeholder, then in any case, you are not neutral. So what we do, we speak the voice of Sudanese people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Truck drivers transporting goods to South Sudan from East African countries have refused to cross the Nimule border point because of a $70 tax levy imposed on truck drivers carrying goods destined for South Sudan. The drivers tell VOA they face insecurity, extortion, and harassment from security officers on South Sudan's roads. They are calling on the East African community to intervene. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
The Nimule crossing border point is in eastern Equatorial State's Magwe County. The town is one of the entry points for traders from Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, and Tanzania. Sudi Kawimwatela, chairperson of the truck drivers group called Long Distance Truck Association, says there are several checkpoints along the Juba Nimule Highway.
Why trucks have refused to cross is about insecurity in South Sudan. Another thing is the many checkpoints from Nimule to Juba, and from Juba also to Bor and Torit, from Juba to Wau, Rumdot, and other highways in South Sudan. Harassment, levies which were introduced without consultation or involving any other security holders. From Nimule customs, there is $70 which was introduced, which we do not know, because already we are paying road user. We are paying fire brigade. We are paying every document that they require. So from Nimule, there is a double checkpoint. This checkpoint is contains all officers, like each and every officer demands for some money. And it's not small money. It's a lot of money. From 10,000 and above.
The program could not independently verify the account of the truck drivers about the checkpoints on the Juba Nimule Road. VOA contacted Gatluak Riak, director of the Nimule Custom Office, but he declined to comment on the reason for imposing a $70 levy on truck drivers transporting goods to South Sudan. Kawi says truck drivers also allegedly experienced inhuman treatment from some security officers on the road to Juba. Benjamin Olum Polepole is the Magwe County Commissioner. He says checkpoints along the Nimule Juba routes provide security for vehicles along the highway.
What is happening there is not actually as the Drivers Association put it. If it is happening, the government actually have agreed to investigate and find out, and those ones will be informed to not to be collecting and unregulated fees against any traveling vehicles. The committee that came from the national government also agreed on some protocols, like the unnecessary roadblocks along Juba Nimule Highway. It has been agreed that they will be removed, but with time. Also, another thing that the drivers have been demanding security services along Nimule Juba Highway. And that is why putting this checkpoint is not typically for money.
Taban Dengai, South Sudan's vice president for the infrastructure cluster, urged the country's 10 states and 3 administrative areas during the just concluded governor's forum to remove illegal checkpoints on highways.
The complete stoppage of roadblocks and illegal checkpoints on roads and on rivers. This is a task that we must do. Any governor or any government of a state is entitled to collect revenue in the state markets. You can impose any taxes in your market, but not on highway. Highway are public roads. The meaning of public is that they are constructed by public money. They belong to everybody. They don't belong to one state.
A businessman operating petrol station in Eastern Equatorial State who refused to be identified for fear of government retaliation says Torit Town will experience fuel shortage because of the driver's strike. Pole Pole says the action of the truck drivers has impacted both truck drivers and business communities in South Sudan.
Very unfortunate to the both side, because even they, to the drivers, their business will actually get down for this moment, and it is going to be a great loss to them. Considering the timing, by now some of them would have even checked up in Juba and they would have gone back to the community in the Republic of South Sudan. Well, this is not actually our intention, but it is the demand of the drivers association.
In 2021, truck drivers across South Sudan's border complained about extortion, insecurity and harassment. South Sudan authorities agreed to remove all the checkpoints along the Nimule Juba Road. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial State Capital, Torit.
From Torit, we go to Entebbe, Uganda, where a coalition of Sudanese civil society groups is discussing how to silence the guns in their country and usher peace in the restive regions across South Sudan. Bakri Al-Jak Al-Madani is the spokesperson of the group known as Al-Taqaddum, headed by former Sudan's Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok. Al-Jak says the meeting aims to forge a common framework for peace in Sudan.
And generally speaking, the agenda is to discuss mainly two things. One is to listen to the report from the Secretary General about the activities, processes, and everything that we have been engaged in the last 3 months. And also to discuss the development in the political scene, that in terms of war and humanitarian crisis.
Let me take you back to the issues of the political developments and humanitarian crisis in Sudan. The people of Sudan have reached a breaking point, and the latest report is that people in camps in Darfur, for instance, Zamzam, exposed to daily aerial bombardment and attacks on the ground from the paramilitary rapid support forces. This is happening at a time when you are meeting. What is the Taqaddum's vision for ending this serious humanitarian crisis in Sudan?
The number one issue on our agenda, which is what we discussed yesterday, was what to do about protection of civilians and humanitarian crisis. What's happening in Zamzam is heartbreaking, it's shocking, and it feels like defeating the bombardments of the civilian by rapid support forces. But by the same token, also yesterday, Sudan Air Force bombarded villages, and over 15 civilians were killed. We have proposed before to the international community a plan with 3 protected areas, 3 have green zones for civilians to be located, and we even asked for the regional forces to be only responsible for the protection of civilians in those 3 areas. And as you know, the idea was entertained by UN Security Council and was voted down because of Russia's veto. So at this point, we talk about the issue, we are concerned about it, we are trying to develop some ideas and plans to see what else could we do, aside from, campaigning and reaching out to UN Security Council. What else can we do?
The people of Sudan, rather, would say, what is your level of engagement with the 2 belligerent forces?
So we have been in touch with both RSF and SAF, and we demanded, we asked for a meeting. This is last year in December, and we met with RSF. And in that meeting, we reached a DOP, Declaration of Principles, regarding the future of the country, and then also 5 points about the protection of civilians. That's what we did. We took the same initiative to, we reached out to Sudan Armed Forces, and multiple times we have heard promises about meetings, and the idea was to take the DOP that we had with RSF to them. They could look at it, and then we hoped if they agree to it, then eventually we can move to a joint talks between them or mediate between them, whatever that idea. So we have been in touch with both sides. Unfortunately, at this point, there is nothing I can tell you is meaningful.
Talk to me more about the difficulties you're facing, because you are dealing with two armed groups, and Takadum are not armed. What are the dynamics of prospective dialogue with people who have guns and those who don't have guns?
We are not a mediator. We made this very clear. We are not supporting any side, but we are not neutral. We are stakeholders. And if you are a stakeholder, then in any case, you are not neutral. So what we do, we speak the voice of Sudanese people. We think we represent a large part of Sudanese community. Many people don't like the war. Many people don't believe the war is a solution. And we speak to that voice. We don't have guns, it's correct, but I think we do have a moral responsibility. And also we do have what we call it a social legitimacy. You have to understand both sides, no matter how they try to justify the war, SAF is trying to call it dignity, and RSF now is claiming to be like a liberation movement. I think neither of those narratives are going to... they're not going to be believable. Sudanese people really, if you really ask them to the bottom line, I don't think they believe either sides. But at this point, they have to find a way for protection. Some people will look up for SAF because of ethnic and tribal reasons for protection, because they feel they are being targeted by SAF, and vice versa. There are lots of people also in Jazeera and some areas, they feel like they need protection from RSF because in their mind, SAF is supposed to do it. So it is really pure polarization based on who's likely to protect me.
What are the buy-ins from Sudan's neighbors, Egypt, Ethiopia, notably South Sudan? As you meet in Kampala, Burhan was in Juba yesterday meeting with President Salva Kiir. What are the buy-ins from these neighboring countries in terms of really seeing an end to this humanitarian crisis?
His Excellency President Mosifini, he is supposed to be the chair of the presidential, what is called, the mechanisms of five presidents. We know that President Ruto, multiple times, he made his point. He reiterated that he is pro-peace. He's supporting any peace talk in Sudan. The same thing, I think yesterday we also heard from President Salva Kiir. He made it very clear that he wanted to see Sudan return to peace before even they resume oil production. I think that's a very strong message. I think, you know, both sides are sharing the revenues from the transport of oil. So the fact that South Sudan could say, we're not going to pump oil as long as you're fighting, I think that's a very good leverage, and it might actually be one of the reasons why those two sides can go to the negotiation table. So that is there. We also heard from Ethiopia multiple times that they really want to see peace. Of course, Egypt is being accused of supporting SAF, but at least one thing we know, they invited a peace talk in July. And the peace and the convention was actually titled How to Make Peace in Sudan. So I think at this point, even if Egypt is supporting SAF, I think they wanted to see an end to the conflict because they are really suffering in terms of the influx of refugees coming to a country that is actually struggling economically and financially with lots of debt and limited resources and almost a scarcity of important goods and services. So I think at this point, we don't see any neighboring country, even Chad. We haven't heard of any neighboring country that is talking about let's continue fighting. So that is clear from the region. It's clear from the international community. What's happening is we don't have an internal political will to make peace. It's not the external factors who are actually fueling this. Yes, we have to admit, both sides are buying weapons, they're getting support, for sure. No one is going to fight forever if they don't have support. But the point is, you can't make peace by external will. We need an internal political will from the two sides to make peace before anything else.
That's Bakri Ajak Al-Medani, spokesperson of the Sudanese Coalition of Civil Society and Political Actors, known as Al-Takadum. He spoke with me via WhatsApp from Entebbe, Uganda, earlier today. A global alliance of civil society organizations released on Wednesday its annual report titled People Power Under Attack 2024. The report says 43 out of 50 countries and territories in sub-Saharan Africa have restricted or shut down civic spaces. It says civic space has improved over the past year in Botswana and Liberia, but got worse in Burkina Faso, Eswatini, Ethiopia, and Kenya. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Conditions for civil society have deteriorated over the past year in 9 countries, 4 of which are in Africa, and general civic space conditions in the African continent remain repressive. According to Civicus, a global alliance of civil society organizations and activists that tracks the state of civic freedoms of 198 countries. Sylvia Baturu is a human rights lawyer and Civicus researcher. She says almost 900 million people living in sub-Saharan Africa live in politically repressed societies.
Almost 70% of the population in Africa south of the Sahara is now living within a repressed civic space. That means a big majority of the continent south of the Sahara are not able to access their rights, are not able to speak out anymore, are not able to engage even meaningfully within democracy efforts and within governance efforts. So this is a really, really concerning figure to have.
Many governments in Africa have curtailed people's rights, the report says, and their security forces have committed violations against protesters, human rights defenders, and journalists. Authorities are accused of disrupting peaceful protests by force, detaining demonstrators, and prosecuting human rights defenders, protesters, and journalists. The report says civic space and freedoms have deteriorated over the past year in 4 African countries: Burkina Faso, Eswatini, Ethiopia, and Kenya. Kenya's ranking was downgraded from obstructed to repressed due to the government crackdown on nationwide protests in June and July, which was sparked by a proposed finance bill that sought to raise taxes. According to rights groups, more than 60 people were killed during the protests in Kenya, and dozens more are missing. They blame the killings on Kenyan security agencies, a claim denied by the government. 38-year-old Edith Kamau lost her son during anti-tax protests in Kenya. She agrees with the report that her country's human rights record and civic space are not good. Kenya has changed a lot, she says. This is not Kenya which we had before. Even well-to-be people are being abducted. We normal citizens are not in a good place, and we don't have enough security. Kenya has become a bad place, and the current president is not good to us. Kamau says her son's body was recovered from a government building, per a police report, and she and her family have yet to get justice. The post-mortem report revealed that he was shot at a close range. The officers who shared the report with us said the weapons used were those exclusively carried by special forces. Since that day, I have been left in the dark about what really happened. Meanwhile, the report downgraded Burkina Faso's status from obstructed to repressed. Eswatini and Ethiopia were downgraded from repressed to closed, meaning authorities there tolerate almost no public dissent or demonstrations. Despite many African countries restricting civic space, some are making progress in allowing political expression and defense of human rights. According to the researchers, civic space and freedom are open in 7 African countries, including Botswana and Liberia, which have improved their conditions in the past year. Liberia witnessed a peaceful power transfer late last year. Civica says it noted fewer violations in press freedom and peaceful assembly areas. In Botswana, voters voted out the ruling party, which had governed the country since 1966, in the October presidential elections. Even before then, Civica says civil society groups were able and allowed to push back against proposed constitutional changes. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new social media attracts 22 million members. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Activists in Chad have launched a campaign to educate clerics and traditional rulers against early marriages, female genital mutilation, and other harmful traditional practices on women. The campaign is part of the United Nations 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Cameroon.
Government officials in Chad say about 70% of girls under 16 are forced into marriage to men who are at times older than their parents. More than 25% of women in the conflict-ridden country say they were sexually abused.
Nous voulons riposter contre l'immunité et la culture du viol et du silence.
That's why 27-year-old Voyan Claudine is telling a crowd at N'Djamena Central Market to fearlessly denounce all forms of abuses on women and girls. Voyang says women activists in Chad strongly condemn early marriages and what she calls a culture of gang rape spreading through conflict-ridden towns and villages in Chad. Voyang is a victim of sexual violence and spokesperson for the Association of Chad's Indigenous Women. More than half of the women who asked the association for help were either sexually assaulted or raped, while about 80 were forced into early marriages by their parents, Voyang said. She said all of the women and girls who resisted abuses on their rights were physically assaulted. Activists in the Central African state say they are using the ongoing 16 days of activism against gender-based violence to educate civilians, especially traditional rulers and religious leaders, against traditional practices they say are harmful to women. Epiphany John Rang is the president of the Chadian Women's Rights League, a non-governmental organization that fights to empower women with rights, freedoms and opportunities.
C'est sous le thème riposter et se reconstruire après les violences que nous entendons cette.
She says this year's theme for the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence in Chad, which is fight back and rebuild after violence, is a clarion call to all civilians to amplify voices of survivors, give moral, psychological and financial support to women and girls, and strengthen feminist movements to reduce and prevent all forms of violence against women and girls and protect women's rights. Speaking on state TV, John Rang said her organization is part of several dozen humanitarian and rights groups that are visiting towns and villages in Chad to raise awareness, educate civilians, and make sure that women are protected. She said their aim is to encourage communities to give equal access to education for boys and girls and stop female genital mutilation, which some men erroneously think makes women remain faithful in marriage. Amina Priscilla Longo is Chad's Women's and National Solidarity Minister. She spoke on Chad State TV on Tuesday.
D'accord, apporter une réponse adéquate à ces nombreuses et fréquentes violences de son excellence.
She says Chad President Mahamat Idriss Déby, who has a strong political will to end all forms of violence, has ordered his government to make sure women who are abused or whose rights are violated have free access to justice and medical and psychological care. She says Déby has ordered his government to prosecute troops and rebels who sexually abuse women. The government of Chad says it will also prosecute traditional and religious leaders who promote the use of outdated and harmful cultural practices on women. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Blue Sky, a decentralized social media platform, has recently experienced significant growth. surpassing 22 million users. The surge is attributed to users migrating from X or Twitter due to their dissatisfaction with changes under Elon Musk's ownership. Andrea has the story narrated by Anne Rice.
Social media platform Blue Sky started in 2019 as an experimental project within Twitter and was led by its co-founder and former Twitter CEO, Jack Dorsey. After the 2024 presidential election, the alternative platform to the Elon Musk-owned X has seen a surge in popularity.
Well, Blue Sky has experienced a massive surge in popularity in large measure because I think that once Donald Trump won election in 2024, there was a sense among many people that Twitter really was effectively done for now that, you know, Elon Musk was going to basically become a member of Donald Trump's administration.
In the first week after the election, the platform saw roughly a million new users a day. The pace has slowed down since the election, but a tracking site shows Blue Sky is gaining over 180,000 users per day. In the world of professional sports, SV Werder Bremen Football Club was among the first ones to leave X for Blue Sky, where they admittedly don't have as many followers. But
we as a club cannot stand up against discrimination, homophobia, transphobia, anti-Semitism, hate speech, and so forth, and then remain on a platform where all of these things are increasing very rapidly.
Other social media platforms like Threads also experienced a surge in new users. But what makes Blue Sky unique is the way it was designed.
Blue Sky has no algorithm. It gives you an enormous amount of choice in who you follow and what content you see.
Bieber is unsure if their move to Blue Sky will be a success, and they're open to other options. What they are sure of, though, is that they're not going back to X.
We have some sense for some values. And if you take this seriously, you have to make some decisions. So we did that. And we feel quite comfortable with that.
Despite this shift away from X, experts say the company has a dominant position on the market with over 300 million active users every month. Blue Sky has a modest 22 million users, which makes it a niche platform, but it continues to grow. For Andrei Dzerkach in Washington, NRIs, VOA News.
That's all from us. This Thursday, December 5th, 2024, we now leave you with a Congolese music star, Fally Ipupa, and the song Stop a la Guerre, which means stop the fighting. We've been listening to Fally Ipupa and the song Stop a la Guerre, which means stop the fighting. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Tian Wong, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm